coming from the Springboks, and Cronje over the top it goes. Creel kicks ahead.
Welcome to SA Rugby Podcast.
Knocked on into the third man.
Hi everybody, and welcome to The Money Man, James Dalton, Mark Keohane, my regular guests. 2019 Rugby World Cup, last time we spoke, there hadn't been really, there'd been Uruguay had upset Fiji, but of course now Japan have done it again.
Yeah, Ireland. They seem to be the giant slayers of the tournament so far, as history would show it.
Yeah.
I think the Irish are asking a lot of questions, even the public. I mean, how on earth did that happen?
But well, I hate to say it, but I did say that Ireland were no hopers in this tournament.
Yeah.
I didn't think they'd stand the possibility of getting knocked out of the group stages. I don't think that's going to happen, but how do you see the question of both of you, how do you see this group now shaking out? You got Japan in control of their destiny. I don't see them beating Scotland, though.
Yeah, I have to say this. You know, Scotland are not, in my opinion, not a good side. Japan are side on form. They're leading their table. You've got to look at the form in the competition to date.
Yeah.
So yeah,
even if that's playing Russia, I mean.
Yeah, I think they could have an outside chance of beating the Scots. It tells us certainly up in there, and you've got to remember, sport's all about confidence, and the Japanese have that at the moment.
Yeah.
It would be nice to see Japan beat the Scots, to be quite honest.
Oh, the tournament needs Japan to advance.
Yeah, absolutely.
Begs the question, there's going to be some dodgy refereeing decisions.
But maybe history would show that it would be highly unlikely.
Yes. Yeah.
If you go back to 2015, Japan won three of their four games. They never went through.
Yeah.
And they could find themselves in a similar position here because of the way it plays out. I mean, Russia, they only won 30-10. So a points differential, which it could come down to, if same league standings. I'm sure Scotland will put Russia away by a lot more. And Ireland will put them away by a lot more. The key game is Japan-Scotland. And I think Scotland will win. And went quite clinically. I thought they were very, very good, given where they were in that opening game against Ireland, when they played Samoa. Mm. To keep Samoa scoreless and score 30-plus points. Again, you look 2 years ago when they had that very good year. They hammered Australia, put 50 points past them, came close to beating New Zealand. Gregor Townsend was hailed as this new saviour and messiah. But again, depth in numbers for them. The minute they lost a few players through injury, they struggled. But going back to the Irish, Johnny Sexton is Ireland at the moment because they were so different without him at 10 as a playmaker. And the context of the game, had he been there, you still think Ireland would have sneaked it somehow. He would have done something, a drop goal or to turn when they had all that pressure as well, when they were pushing at 19-12. He may have taken 3 points to get it back, to get within a five-point score. There's a huge difference between their first choice 10 and what's after that. And we've said the same about Pollard. You know, you go back to 2011, New Zealand won it with their fifth choice. But very few countries would be able to go into a final with a fifth choice fly-off and actually win the game.
Yeah.
So I'd love to see Japan advance. I think it'd be fantastic for the game. And I love the way they play the game under Jamie Joseph and Tony Brown. It's fast-paced. It looks like a Super Rugby side. Mm. But I just think maybe Scotland up front will have a little bit too much for them.
Yeah, it'll be, for me, I don't think it'll be a blowout. I think it'll be a pretty close game. And then you've got bonus points that's going to come into it, right? I can't see them beating Scotland. I think Scotland win by 10, 15 points.
But if you look, Kev, at the opening game, Russia, and there was an expectation they should blow them away. And they were behind at half time. They were struggling. No expectation on them against Ireland. And they came out all guns blazing in there. So how are they going to deal with the expectation? And I don't think that side's good enough to deal with that expectation.
No, I don't think so either. But that's why games aren't played on paper. And should be one hell of a game.
It will be. But it was the weekend the World Cup came alive a bit. And your Welsh boys came. The Dragon roared again.
Yeah.
For a moment I thought they were going to blow that as well. But great example of a tier one against a tier one kind of rugby World Cup game. And Wales looked the real deal for me there. And I thought the way they hung on in the end, those last 5 minutes, turned pressure, and that adversity into an advantage, got a vital penalty and nailed it. And as Gatland said afterwards, for the last decade since he's been coaching them, they've lost every game like that to Australia in the last 3 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah, they've only won 2 out of 16 so far.
Oh, I know.
What was quite interesting for me in that game, Wales started off incredibly well. I mean, even that flow, the intensity of that game, the overall ball skill, handling, running onto the ball at pace, getting in behind the advantage line, to me was quite significant. Mm-hmm. But what stood out for me is that when Wales made their substitutions, you could actually see the remarkable difference between their number one choice and their number two choice. And it, for me, that was the turn in the game. And that's where we find a lot of touching on our earlier conversation. Mm. You have a look at the Japanese sides. They don't really have that second equally good replacement for their number one. The teams that have good replacement benches are Australia, South Africa, and New Zealand. And that's what you really need. You need that number two who's equally good as your number one to come on the field and make an impact and hold on to that game and secure that win. So, yeah, the Welsh were a little bit lucky, but I think they've done enough in the beginning to hold on to that game.
Yeah, look, we'll take it. We've lost enough.
What was also impressive for me with Wales is how wide they play. They literally play from one try line to the other try line, and defensively, they are very, very sound. Mm. So, for me, that makes them a dangerous and a secure team in terms of attack out wide and defensively strong.
And reasonably fit, from what I could see, to be able to hold on for 30, 40 minutes.
Do you know they only had 18% possession in the second half?
Well, it doesn't surprise me. I don't remember touching the ball.
And the fact that they still held on, so you know, you start asking questions. Is territory really that significant, or is it what you actually do with the ball when you have it
for
whatever percentage of the game?
But, you know, there's also a pleasing thing for me that Australia lost, because they must be the most uncharismatic team at that tournament and the most uncharismatic leadership. I watched Hooper afterwards. He was so arrogant in his post-match interview. He was dismissive. All Shaker does is whinge, moan, and says that there's this world rugby against their mentality. Everything that his team does is right, and the world sees it differently. Yeah. And I think the world's also getting a bit
fed up with them,
you know, every single, like, the Reese Hodgson, he should have been out of the tournament. It was a shocking challenge in the open against Fiji that they're still harping on that they were singled. The Samoan blokes got a straight 3 weeks. No one even blinked, you know, and you see some of the stuff that's been missed. So I was so pleased that Wales had won. Wales are a rugby nation, Australia aren't.
Well, Hodge is a millennial, isn't he? And so, I mean, most of these guys are. So.
But I mean, when Hooper was challenging the tackle technique of the Welsh fly-off,
I guess what we say, Mark, is there anything worse than an Australian millennial?
Nothing worse, eh? And there's nothing worse than an Australian winger. Jeez.
Yeah. No, you're absolutely right. I mean, Checker's done himself no favours. But then he shouldn't be even at the World Cup coaching this. You got Australian rugby's...
They should have fired him a year ago, if not longer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, I guess they don't have the balls to do that.
Well, clearly, who do they choose to replace him?
Jake White says he's available.
Oh, Jake's available.
I don't know. Has he burnt that bridge to get to Australia?
So, on the way out
to the They could do worse, I suppose. And so tomorrow, on Friday, we got the Box versus Italy. You know, again, this is one of the... It's almost everybody... talks up the rugby, but then they want it to be over and we predict the winners in a week and everything like that, you know. I'm hearing if we lose this game, we're out of the tournament. Of course we are. If we do, you know, it's we won't lose to Italy. And it's a mugs game. I mean, the point spread is 30 points. I wouldn't touch it because the bookies have probably got it there or thereabouts. But a win, I'd be happy with a 10-15 point win.
Yeah, I've got it at 35-10. It could be 30-10 or 30-15, I think. But it will be a comfortable 30-15. Yeah. It will be one of those. It would be the Romania and Canada game you guys had in 95. You just got to go out there and win it to advance to the next thing. You don't have to go win it by 70 points. And
Yeah, I think just for me, you know, it's one thing just winning. And I come back to this and I labour this, that you've eventually got to get that dog in you where you eventually totally seal the opposition out of the game. You go look at our game against Namibia. The last 20 minutes, we never scored any points. You know, we scored 10 more points against Namibia than Italy did. you know, that doesn't really say much for the caliber of team that we've chosen and how we regard ourselves.
But it's amazing how everybody on the field gets white line fever when they play a tier two team.
Yeah.
Everybody wants to. Everybody thinks they can score from their own goal line. It's everybody's rushing. You know, you don't. They don't go through the phases, and they don't do the normal things they would do against a Buck team or an England team. And if they, you know, you're seeing today Canada playing New Zealand. I mean, New Zealand looked terrible. So you can never. It doesn't matter what you do against a tier two team, unless you blow them away 120-0. It's not good enough.
Sure.
But if you look at the Buck game. 19 points up after 19 minutes. Yeah. All Blacks 14 points up after 10 minutes. The game's already won there, and that's what you see. That's when that white line fever, the game becomes loose. Everyone wants to score. The ball's been spilled because there's no pressure of losing the game. Mm. And I remember in 2015 when New Zealand played Georgia and they won 41-10. They played Namibia and won 43 or something. And there was a lot of criticism like, how good are they? And Hansen's response was, good enough to go to the next round because when we beat Italy by 90 points in 2007, we were home after the quarterfinals.
Yes.
So I think you also find a lot here that these guys are just, they set the tone and they get through the motions. They don't want to get injured. They want to play in the next game.
But, I mean, take cognizance of that point, but at the same time, Dutchwater, your skill levels just go out the window. Do you now have an abundance of handling errors?
I think it's the intensity.
Does your finishing, your execution or your finishing go wayward as well? You know, what really happens at that
point? Well, I think
when your tail's in the air, you should be wanting more and more, and when your confidence gets bigger.
But the psychology, I think, James, is that you lower yourself, you lower your standard to the standard that you're playing. Because, you know, it's...
Or is it not maybe you can only play as good as your opponents allow you to play at some stages?
Yeah, there's a bit of everything. This is why the Soccer World Cup is far more interesting, because there's always games that could go either way. There's not really in a Rugby World Cup. And you're watching Canada, who shouldn't be at the World Cup. And that, you know, I grew up there and played rugby there and loved my time there. Mm. And the 91 Canadian team, I think they got knocked out in the quarterfinals against New Zealand.
In a very competitive game. Either way, after 60 minutes.
So to see Canada struggling playing the way that they are, it's as if they've forgotten how to tackle. You know, it's embarrassing watching. Namibia shouldn't be. There's a lot of countries that shouldn't be here. And the IRB's got to stop playing lip service to wanting to saying that they want to grow the game and doing this focus every 4 years. And you know, something's got to change. Because it's right now it just feels like we're waiting for the party to start. You know?
Top six World Cup.
Well, I mean, I said it last week. I would love a system where you had, say, the top eight, and they played seven matches, and the top two go into a final, and your second tier top eight play seven matches, top two go into a B World Cup final and A World Cup final, and that way you win that World Cup, you are the best team at that tournament. What do you guys think of that revolution?
It's quite an interesting proposition, but I think it would be quite insulting to the second tiers to. Be categorized as a World Cup.
Well, they're already categorized as a second tier nation. Yeah, so,
and nice to see France and Argentina in that group, second tier.
You know what? And I spoke about this earlier in terms of acclimatizing not only to Japanese environment, Japanese culture, their food. Obviously, you know, the dietitians would have made the guys as comfortable in terms of normal diet, but it's getting used to this humidity currently, which we've seen for an abundance of knock-ons and spilled ball. Yeah. So I think it's also, you know, the side that gets mentally tough over that and secures and ensures the minimal amount of handling errors is also going to be very successful in this World Cup.
Yes, definitely. Definitely.
And the refereeing, I see Joe Smith is now, he was very... gracious in defeat against Japan, but then went the official IRB route and queried four very distinctive things, and the IRB have confirmed he was right.
Yeah.
That the referee got it wrong. And I keep on saying this. Craig Joubert knocked Scotland out of a World Cup with a diabolical decision because he didn't know the law there or didn't apply it.
Yeah.
And Australia went
Maybe they should stop changing the law every year.
But if I was a coach or a player or a supporter and... it actually gets acknowledged every time. Yep, we got it wrong.
Sorry.
Sorry, it's human error. It's like, when is human error going to actually be eradicated out of the game?
You know, yeah, it's like your partner coming home going, where were you? I was out with another woman. Oh, sorry. I mean, you're right.
We confirm it.
What Kevin is saying, the game, maybe the game is becoming way too technical to apply all these technicalities continual, fast-moving pace game.
It is, James, with the game I played, I retired in 1860, no, I stopped playing in
1972.
I stopped playing in 94. Yeah. And the changes to the game since then, it's unrecognizable in a lot of ways. Yeah. You'd be up to, when I played, you could go in, if someone's standing on the wrong side of the ball, you'd give them the slipper.
Yeah.
You know, get them out of the way. 100%. That discouraged that sped up the game.
Intentional, like cheating and
disruption. Yeah, and it wasn't an intention to hurt somebody, but if they were lying on the wrong side of the ruck, you just rucked them out of the way.
Yeah.
It was a self-cleansing problem, because you do it once to somebody and they have that mitre.
They're considered going there again.
Exactly.
What was interesting, did you also listen to the commentary against the Wales Australia? How when there was a high tackle, there was an interpretation. So it was either high or dangerous.
Yeah.
Which one is it? Is it dangerous or is it high?
It was highly dangerous.
Because they both offences. So, and that was quite
I didn't see anything wrong with the tackle as a Welshman. Mm. You know, it's like, well, you've got to be off the handoff when someone's coming in.
Yeah.
But if you look at the technique now, especially among the forwards, and every second tackle is around the neck and it's a neck roll, because the forward ducks his head and he goes in. So where do you go? You hold him and you bring him back. But it seemed okay because it's a forward. But if that happens in the midfield, it's a straight yellow card or potentially a red card. Yeah. And you're getting a lot where the guy's going in for the hit and then the guy's ducking at the same time and then it goes up and he's super slow motion. It looks terrible. But
yeah.
So, and then on a freeze frame, it looks even worse. So the thing is, it's, you know, I'm all for player welfare and player safety, but it's not tiddlywinks. It's a collision sport.
We knew what we were getting into when we played the game. We knew it was a rough game. Sure. I mean, in fact, most of the Canadian football players that I went to university with and whatnot, they would say that I'm crazy when I played the game. I'd look at their game, I think, you guys are crazy. You know, we're getting to a stage where we're almost going to become touch rugby. You know, it's become such a...
Well, it's going to lose that physicality edge. I mean, you even look at the Welsh high tackle. In my opinion, that was the wrap around onto the back of the shoulder blade, and then he slipped up. So the initial contact wasn't high. And that's where they get in it wrong. So you can start on the shoulder and slip up, and you're going to be guaranteed be pinned for a high tackle.
Yeah. But you get so many players who, on the point of contact, the attacker is ducking already.
Yes.
And he's stepping. So if I'm coming at the right angle, in that moment of impact, I'm at the wrong angle. And the concern for me is that a World Cup semi-final or final is going to be determined because of a red card based on an interpretation where the world governing body will say afterwards, maybe he got it wrong. And that's just not fair or good enough.
That will be so, so sad for this World Cup.
And Kev's looking at his screen at this stage, saying, as diabolical as the All Blacks were, it's back to a point a minute. 50 after 50. So there's the X factor you were speaking about.
There we go. All that money I put on Canada down the drain.
Now that's how you beat the team.
They've certainly sorted their handling problems out in a second. Anyway, so let me ask.
Sorry, just also looking at a bit of the All Black game, and I've got to touch on this with South Africa now. I had a look at some of the stats in terms of our play against Namibia, and our offloads are way, way down where I believe they need to be. So what is that telling me? That there's not enough synergy between our backs and our forwards, and there's not enough continuation of play. I believe...
Was that more in the New Zealand game or in the Namibia game? Sorry, James.
So what I'm saying is I believe that a player should play to play again. So you should keep following the ball. But South Africa at the moment have two distinctive styles of play. Either they go straight onto the man and go to ground, or they beat the man, and after they've beaten the man, they don't look for the offload. So our play is very, very almost predictable. If we can just get what the All Blacks do, and sorry, we're always mentioning the All Blacks, but they are the benchmark, is to look for that continuation and keep that ball in the air, keep it moving. It could significantly improve our overall performance.
No, without a doubt. I mean, but again, these players get a different mentality when they think they can get a bit of World Cup glory by touching down. And when you see, and you saw it in the first half with the All Blacks in this game, is that they weren't playing as a team. Everybody thought that everybody was trying to score from everywhere on the field. They weren't going through the phases, and the results were predictable. So I don't know. I never read too much into these games, and I don't bet on them too much either because I have no idea. Yeah. You know, you don't have any form to guide you on these things. The real betting starts in the group stages.
Yeah.
For me,
in the playoffs.
So after, from what we've seen in this tournament, you know, let's chat now about who you still think, have you been changed in any way in your minds about the outcome of this tournament on what you've seen?
If I can go first, yeah. I think I'll stick with what I said last week.
Japan,
not to make it, but New Zealand, South Africa, England, and it was, for me, was it Wales or Australia? I felt my gut was Wales, and that was confirmed on the weekend.
Yeah.
I think those will be your semi-finalists, and then I think a cracking semi-finals.
And England?
Yeah, England, Wales, South Africa, and New Zealand. And I think the semi-final, way it plays out, if the pool stage, say Ireland does win the pool in that, it would be
England, New Zealand, Wales, South Africa.
And two brilliant semi-finals because Wales have the wood over South Africa, so it would be a big one for us, and England have the capacity to knock over New Zealand because of the strength of their forward pack.
Yeah.
So it wouldn't be a foregone conclusion that it's a South Africa-New
Zealand final.
Yeah, those would be two amazing semi-finals.
Well, I'll be flying over for the South Africa-Wales one. I can't miss that one. And I don't know, maybe I'll get a special jersey made up red and green, you know? Or reversible, I can just...
A collector's item.
And I think on form, they've been the foremost impressive sides here.
Well, I still think, you know, I've had a few people interact with me and tell me that England, they haven't been impressed by England. What haven't you been impressed by? They've played two games, they've scored 80 points and given up 10. I mean, mixing and matching their teams. So, for me, England have looked as good as I thought they would.
Argentina haven't been impressed. Their players, I said, they're very boring, England. Eddie Jones has responded to that.
Yeah.
So
you know, if you're a redheaded stepchild, just sit in the corner and don't say anything. Don't draw attention.
Redhead with no freckles.
Well, I'm saying Argentina's in this case the redheaded stepchild.
Rusted
on. It's just, why say anything? Why poke the bear?
You won 3 out of 30 games.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And then, what do you guys think beyond the semi? Who do you think?
For me, England.
England.
I still like the 9-2 and form of the funds.
Mm-hmm.
A while ago, I put 400 rand down on England to win the World Cup in cricket, and England to win the World Cup in rugby, got decent odds on that.
Is it known to how many tries scored in the final, how many penalties kicked?
You know, Mark, if there's a bet to be had, I'll find it.
At this stage,
I'm going with you on that. England, South Africa.
At this stage, England would tick both boxes in terms of penalties kicked and tries scored. Certainly.
Yeah. England look good. Mm-hmm. For me, still right up there. New Zealand. You know, it's hard to bet against that team in black, eh?
But I just feel that they're at the end of that cycle, and they're teams that are as good. Marginally better at the moment. I've put England in that category. And,
I have to say this, you look at the game against the box, against the All Blacks. I mean, we were all over them at one stage.
Mm.
I mean, we should have theoretically beaten them by 10 points.
Yeah.
And they landed up beating us by 10 points. Mm. So can you ever really write them off or say that their curve is on the downward?
No.
I don't really know that. You know, they are certainly and will always remain a factor.
But when I say the curve's on a downward, if you don't lose a game for 4 years and you lose one, you're on a downward curve. Italy's on a spike. They haven't won a game for 5 years, now they're on two. So it's in context. What I mean is where it's always been a kind of foregone conclusion that they would win and you'd be shocked if they didn't. It wouldn't be a shock if they didn't.
No, and they get into a final with Wales. Or they can't play England, can they, in the final?
No, they're semi-final though.
Yeah, so if they get into a final with Wales or South Africa, it's going to be a close game. It's going to be, you know, one score game.
But from a purist point of view, if you were neutral and you just wanted a brilliant game of rugby, Wales New Zealand would be a fantastic final. They both play such positive rugby. They play with width. 2011, that's the final everyone in New Zealand wanted because they said it was New Zealand versus New Zealand because of Gatlin's influence and the kind of the style of play and that. But what I've really loved about this Welsh side for a while now is that they go out to play rugby. And the criticism of Warren Ball, as they used to call it, that he's rushed defence and that he didn't ever want to play with the ball, I think is absolutely misplaced. As New Zealand goes and scores another try. Watching it with one eye, point a minute, it's 61.
Yeah, look, to me, as a Welshman, I want anybody but New Zealand in the final.
Because it's been 50 odd years.
Because we just I think we beat them last in the 70s.
The thing with having New Zealand in the final, and they know how to win. You know, you have them in the final, they all likely would end up winning the final.
We just don't beat New Zealand. I mean, the box we've beaten three times in a row, Australia twice, but we don't have any confidence to beat New Zealand. So I want South Africa. That would be Wales. We can't. We can get a Wales South Africa final, can we?
Yeah. Depending on where it goes now with Ireland and that kind of thing. Because then they would go into the other pool. Yeah.
Yeah. So, but it's every World Cup that there's some upset, and again, you know, everybody fills in these brackets and go, okay, this is going to be the tournament, and then Japan comes along, and we don't know what's going to happen, and that's the love, that's the beauty of sport.
Well, it'd be quite interesting if Japan end on top of their pool, then
they play us, then and they could play be Brighton Revisited, yeah. Another sequel.
Yeah, something. Well, look. Look, it's everything. It's very relaxed right now until we get to the group stages, isn't it? Nothing's changed really in terms of the favourites, with the exception of Ireland, who I never really backed as getting past the quarterfinal.
And you speak to all the players who have played in successful teams over the last, say, 10, 12 years. They do say there's something very significantly different the minute in their mindset they go into a World Cup quarterfinal, because you just can't lose, you're gone. Yeah. Where even in a pool stage, you can lose a game and come back. And you've seen teams buckle in that. Ireland in 2015, blown away by Argentina, just couldn't handle the pressure. I know they had one or two injuries, but it becomes a mental game there. And that's when New Zealand has had the edge in the last two World Cups. They've known how to win ugly in certain games.
I think we've seen, you know, in your playoffs, it's on the day, certainly on the day, not always necessarily the form side. It's on the day, it's a bounce of the ball. And a couple of penalties that go in your favour.
Or create the winner. Or a missed time tackle.
And a red card.
A red card, you got game over. Warburton, semi-final.
Unbelievable.
So, we'll wrap it up now. Who's winning, James?
Out of?
Who's winning the tournament?
I'd like to say South Africa.
Well, you just did.
Yes, I'd like to say South Africa.
Yeah.
But I don't think we have enough cohesiveness between our backs and forwards and continuation of play for us to win a World Cup final. Yeah. I would say my utmost favourite would be England to win the World Cup.
I'd say you're a prick, but I don't want to fight you.
Well, you know, I've been called worse things in my life.
No, fair enough. Because Mark, who's winning? Who's winning?
I'd say on stats and performance and overall combinations of backs and forwards and cohesiveness and continuation of play, I'd go with England and South Africa as a dark horse.
Okay, Mark.
I'm going to the top four.
Yeah, it's one. I just want one.
Come on, man.
Who's refereeing it? I would fancy a South Africa-England final, and depending on the referee, I think we'll be very influential. There's nothing to choose between them, but I would say England.
Yeah, I could say it's this team, depending on the rain, the sun, the wind.
Okay, Wales!
So then just give me, let's get off the fence. Who's winning?
Springboks.
I think England. Okay. And as a Welshman, I hate to say that. Yeah.
I can imagine. Yeah. That dragon must be...
Oh, he's like this with a paw over his eye.
He must be doing bad flips on your chest.
He is.
So just to repeat that, Springboks to win the World Cup.
Yeah, thanks.
Thank you.
Okay. Yeah. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Oh, sorry,
Ken. Thank you, Owens.
Your book's coming out. When's your book coming out?
My book will be launching on the 2nd of November with exclusive books.
Yeah.
And, it's looking forward to a interesting... publication and life story of the bullet James Dalton.
And are you doing a tour to promote that book?
Yes, we are. We're just waiting for some dates. We'll be doing a book signing, Mark and myself.
Yeah.
My tag team partner in Durban, Johannesburg, and obviously Cape Town, the mother city.
Oh, fantastic!
Yeah.
So I know that my legal team read it, but the legal lady. And she said she was in tears. So I don't know what is in that, but I look forward to reading it.
I think she saw James with some hair.
Well, at least there's some pity for me somewhere.
Well, good. I look forward to that, James.
Obviously, to you, Kevin, thank you for the opportunity to do an autobiography. You know, if it wasn't for your belief and convincing my partner, yeah, to write the book, then it wouldn't have become a reality in the next 30 days. So thank you so much to you and your support.
Yeah, anytime, mate. Look forward to reading it.
Yeah.
And just on I heard you might be getting into the octagon. Is that just pure speculation right now?
You know, right now you have this ability to make me do shit. So, yeah, it could be a very, very, in all likelihood, yes, it could be.
Well, Haskell's got into the octagon, hasn't he?
I believe he's in good shape. And like I say, bring the paperwork.
Yeah, who wasn't in good shape when they were 30? I mean, geez.
Yeah, come on. Also true.
Well, let's just say.
Well, I mean, I've got 17 years on him.
Could you take him?
Brother, what's the worst that could happen?
It gives you a bitch slap.
So, look, I think only if it does materialize, which maybe I think it could and it would and it should, I think it will be good.
I think he'd be afraid of you, actually.
Well, we've got to fight him at altitude.
I think once he reads my book, he could be afraid of
you. Well, you'll certainly be concerned about who's in your corner.
Well, that's what I'll keep an eye on and wish you the best with the book and whatever it is you're doing commercially in your life.
No, thank you so much. Meeting. I appreciate it.
Thanks, mate.
And thank you to Mark for being... for writing the book so well. I mean, I got tears rolling in my eyes last night reading certain other chapters. So, well done, my brother.
Thanks,
well done. Don't leave him hanging. Jesus, good. Papa Smurf.
Yeah, you had a bit of state fright there. Yeah.
That's the longest hang time I've ever seen.
No, Scott.
Scott.
Do it.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for coming in, and we'll be back next week to discuss and see what's happening in the World Cup.
Thank you, guys.
Cheers, man.
Coming from the Springboks and Cronje, over the top it goes. Creel kicks ahead.
Welcome to SA Rugby Podcast.
Knocked on. Into the man.